Welcome to How to Talk to Kids About Anything with Dr. Robin Silverman, a podcast loaded with practical tips, powerful scripts, personal stories, and simple steps to make even the toughest conversations easier. So get ready to get the information you need to make the impact you want from someone you trust, your friend, parenting expert, Dr. Robin Silverman.
So if you've heard me talk about leadership or strength finding or mentoring, then you have heard me talk about the 12 P's that stand in the way of people's success. So when I'm presenting on this particular topic, I ask the audience to respond back to me. If you hear yourself, I want you to say out loud, "That's me." Okay, so some of the P's that we've had are pushback and
Sorry.
That's our guest coming in. Thanks, man. Okay, so pushback, perfectionism, or pandemonium. That's like, I've lost my book, I've lost my file, I've lost my mind. And then there's this big P that always elicits the largest response from my audience when we speak about it, when I say procrastination, and the entire place erupts with, "That's me." Okay. So as we are in the spring, we often see procrastination take hold, riding the coattails of spring fever, as well as big projects like final exams and end of year papers and planning for the next year or for the summer. Yes, our departing high school students who are talking about college and jobs may be procrastinating too, and some of them are barely budging. So we're going to talk about all of this, all of the different procrastination, how it comes out, what we're supposed to do about it, and what we can talk to our kids about it, how we can talk to our kids about it. And we're going to do that with friend of the show, Ned Johnson. Ned Johnson is a motivational coach who runs an elite tutoring service called Prep Matters. And along with our friend Bill Stixrud, he co-wrote the best-selling book, The Self-Driven Child. If you're on YouTube, you may see that behind me, as well as the more recent What Do I Say? They were on for both of those books. Ned is a sought-out speaker. He's appeared on How to Talk to Kids About Anything several times. Mm-hmm. I've appeared on his podcast, and his words of wisdom are weaved into my book as well, How to Talk to Kids About Anything. So welcome back, Ned, to How to Talk to Kids About Anything.
Thanks for having me. I'm people, if you're listening to this, you can't, I'm sort of jumping up and down a little bit because I'm pretty excited. I've been waiting for this conversation.
This is very exciting. So before we jump in completely, mm-hmm. as somebody who is working with students all the time on testing and readiness for academic steps, as well as a dad, as well as a human being, what would you say are like the top things, like the very, very top things that you can tell us about your personal experience when it comes to procrastination?
Well, it's personal observations, and it is what I think I understand about the brain science of this. And well, one big thing to start with, if people don't yet know, there's something called the Yerkes-Dodson law, the Yerkes-Dodson curve, and it's a bell curve. And across, so upside down you, if you don't know what that is. So across the bottom is physiological arousal measured in a stress hormone called cortisol that then kicks off dopamine and norepinephrine. And then on the y-axis going up and down, performance. And the simple idea is that typically, if there's no stress, there's no performance. No downside for paying your taxes? Probably put it off. Don't have to write a term paper? Probably won't. But then with some pressure, some increasing pressure, there's more engagement. And then, of course, there's a place called optimal arousal where you're super excited. It's pretty intense, but not too intense. And then at some point on the other side of the curve, things fall down and then performance falls apart. So if you're not motivated enough, if there's not enough activation, you don't engage optimally. If there's too much pressure, too much stress, you don't engage optimally. Here's the fun part. That curve is different for different people. Mm. The ADHD among us are way out there on the other end. Girls and women on average, not uniformly, but on average, need less pressure to engage. Boys and men on average need more pressure to engage. So you can see where this sometimes causes problems. I have a tendency with my much better half to say things like, oh, what's the worst that can happen? And she will look at me and say, and you're going to find out, aren't you? Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, you betcha. So here's the thing with procrastination. There are two big reasons why people procrastinate. And we can think about these and then talk about what we could do about this. People will procrastinate because if they're ADHD or ADHD adjacent, they just don't feel like doing the thing. They know it's important, but they don't feel like doing it. And so they wait for approaching deadlines to get enough pressure, to get enough brain activation, to finally feel like doing the thing they need to do. My entire life is like this. This is who I am. My delightful son, we'll talk about him in a moment, actually diagnosed with ADHD. On the flip side, people will often avoid doing things. They'll procrastinate. They'll put off if they're really anxious about it. And the pain of doing it, they put it off because it makes them unhappy, makes them feel stupid. They don't like it, whatever. Until at some point, the pressure of not doing the thing is greater than the pressure of doing the thing. And then they engage. You can imagine that both of these things are internal states. And so we as loving parents look and say, wouldn't it be so much easier if you just started ahead because whatever, whatever. But if I'm the parent and the kid is anxious, my mom or dad doesn't get how stressful this is for me. And then when you say, shouldn't you be doing this? It actually just creates more pressure. Mm-hmm. Or if you're an ADHD kid, shouldn't you be doing this? And I'm thinking, not really, because I got 3 more hours until this is due, right? And in both situations, when we become very controlling, we screw up executive functions and work against kids doing things. Is simply put, I've only asked like 37 kids this, and it's 100 to 1 so far. How do you feel when your mom or dad asks you, you know, shouldn't you be doing your homework? And every single kid has said, it just makes me not want to do my homework. So it doesn't actually create, we feel better, but it actually works against the motivation that we want. But that being said, I get that as a parent, you're thinking this is going to be a train wreck, right? Yeah. And you're trying, yeah. And you try to avoid train wrecks. You don't want to see your kid get run over. But the hard part is, and this is particularly for middle school kids, it usually doesn't help when we lean in and do this, because they then avoid us. They don't tell us the truth. They're responding to us rather than the circumstances. They're annoyed by the logical consequences when we've deprived them of the natural consequences. On and on it goes. And so my feeling about this, I mean, if you've got a kid who's ADHD and should be medicated, great. But my feeling about this is we really want kids at the youngest possible age to learn cause and effect. Let them screw things up. Let them miss deadlines, because there's nothing that you as a parent can say that informs them like, oh, I'm sorry, kiddo, you missed the deadline. You don't get to be on the soccer team this season. Mm-hmm. Oh, mm-hmm. Oh, that's painful. Yep. And we tend to learn from things that are really painful. Don't touch that. It hurts. Right. Don't do this. It makes me sad.
That's such a good explanation. And of course, I feel like you're directing this all to me, which I know you're not, but I have an eighth grader and he has ADHD. And this is exactly what's happening in my house right now.
How old?
He's 13 turning 14. And he, if we let him, no, I'm just kidding. He's 13 turning 14 in June. And, you know, the big projects have come.
Yeah, yeah.
And he waits and waits and waits. And then the big project is almost insurmountable.
Yeah.
In the time that he has left. And that means that he has to take extra days. And then he gets points off. And then sometimes he gets so many points off that he gets a zero because I'm sorry, too bad. Like, you can't hand it in late.
Yeah.
So it's really hard for somebody.
Is there OCD or anxiety on the backside?
Yeah,
of that?
Sure. There's anxiety.
Okay.
So he has both the anxiety of like not knowing exactly how to start or what exactly am I doing? And then on top of that, the ADHD and is medicated for.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
this, for both of those things. But, you know, it's he is fully capable. So it is always frustrating for me, type A, you know, no ADHD, like, let's get it done
yeah,
to see this child then struggling you know, to deal with the pressure of getting something done and get it done well, because he wants to get it done well, but having waited so long that it makes it nearly impossible.
I will offer to you the unhelpful observation that I shared with a parent whose kid attended a really nice private school near where we are, but they drove quite a ways every morning. And this mom recounted that this delightful but brilliant boy would basically be doing his homework on the way to school, including writing his papers on his phone. I mean, why won't he just, if he would just start this a day earlier, it'd be so much easier. And I gently said, for you. And then I said to her, what I'll offer to you, because why not, Robin? You know, chances are it's been a while since you've had the brain of a 13-year-old boy.
This is, it's been a while, maybe never. Okay.
Right. And so it's hard, you know, it is hard. The reason I asked about the anxiety or OCD is I'm probably ADHD. I do everything at the last minute. But the closer I get to last minute, the more my standards slip. I just get it done, right? And so is it B plus? B plus is good enough. We kids can really get themselves twisted up when they put things off and then hold themselves to standards that are now impossible with the amount of runway that they have left. So then they miss the runway and they, you know, put the plane into the, you know, the creek. And we've got, and for people with ADHD, getting deadlines and extensions is not helpful. I will, just to make you feel better about you, and you can, you know, give me a hair eyeball too. My delightful son, ADHD, this is all the way through high school, these big research papers. I thought I was going to die watching him not write these papers.
So
I remember my wife said, it kills me to watch him waste so much time. And I, again, gently, generously offered, don't watch.
Don't watch. Like, that's what my mother says. My mother says the same thing. Don't watch.
So my son, our son started college during COVID 2020. And like every university, they gave them all the extensions, take all the grades. They're just so worried about kids that, you know, mental health and everything else, kind of like whatever. For him, his sort of bent noir is writing papers. So he had this philosophy course, lots of writing, and a Spanish class, lots of writing. The Spanish teacher was like, oh, Spanish time, do it. Hand it in whatever you want, no problem. Right. And so we've been hearing about all these papers overdue. And so I'm like, how are you doing that? How are you doing with that? And we pick him up. He's first year of college is done. We pick him up. We're driving off campus. He's, of course, the last child to leave campus because that's my kid.
Yeah,
we're driving off campus. We're about 3 miles off. I said, hey, Matthew, I just got to ask, were you able to get finish up those papers that were overdue? Long silence from the backseat of the car.
Ooh.
Well, I have 5 papers that are due in 48 hours. And if I get them done, I think I'll be fine. If I don't, I think I'll fail 2 of my classes. In what I consider an epic parenting victory, when I managed to not drive the car into a ditch or to a tree, kept going right down the middle.
Yay, you.
Long silence from the front seat of the car, my wife and me. And one of us pipes up, is there a way that we can help?
Oh, yes. It's like the
and
story of my life.
And he managed to get these things done. And I mean, my son got more A's his first year of college than I got all 4 years of college. So I don't have a lot to say about this. He then did this again. And this is where I'll pull in my best Bill Stixrud-ism. Bill always talks about whose problem is it, right? Whose responsibility is it? Because ultimately, whose life is it? Mm-hmm. So we, his second year, we've picked him up. He's doing second semester abroad. So he's leaving campus at the end of first semester of sophomore year. My wife and my son, my daughter, we've all gone off. We're going up north into Canada for some time before Christmas holidays. And same thing, he's had the same Spanish professor and all these papers are overdue. And I'm just like, it's like a nightmare. I was like, you know, it's like Groundhog Day, but like a horror version of this. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wait, again? And he's like, yeah, no, but he said, it's fine. I'm like, he says I can hand it on Friday. I'm like, dude, Friday is Christmas Eve. He's like, yeah, no, but I'll get it done. And I want to throttle him. And I have a really high tolerance for threat. But even at that, I'm like, what is wrong with you? Why would you do this? I mean, I'm just like, what are you thinking? Right.
Right.
But I'm aware that that's probably not that constructive.
Right. Right.
And in the back of my head, what pops up with this little Bill Stixrud saying, whose problem is it?
Mm.
whose problem is it? And like you, I'm wired, like all parents, we're wired to help. And I'm going, it's not my problem. It's not my problem. In part because I speak six words of Spanish. So there's not a darn thing that I can do. So every day we get up and say, hey, we're going to the Christmas party. Anything we can get you? No, I'm good. Should we check in and see if he wants some lunch? Yeah, that'd be great. And we basically see him and then we see him for dinner. This child in 3 days writes 32 pages of papers. You've written books. You know how hard it is to write 32 pages. 20 of them are in Spanish.
Oh my goodness.
Gets it all done. And I'm just like, holy smokes. And I just had to not watch. Now, it's different for your kiddo, right? Because he's ADHD. My kid's ADHD. My 22-year-old has better executive functions. He's had more experience, blah, blah, blah. But what I would maintain in all of this is, you know stuff. All your parents listening, of course you know stuff. You're more than 13. You've gone to high school. You've probably even gone to college. You've handed in papers. You got all kinds of ideas. But the hard part is when we jump all over them, it doesn't help. And so what I've done for the longest while is to say, boy, it looks like you got a lot to do there. Is there a way that I can help? And then you try to, you know, because you're trying to voice support, or if you've got, because of course you have ideas, I've got an idea, but can I make the suggestion? Let me know whether you think this would be helpful or not. The one executive function tool that's pretty good, there's a really nerdy book on my bookshelf back here called The Thief of Time. It's like 330 pages of psychology and philosophy of procrastination. Please don't read it. It's brutally dry. But the one big takeaway, and this goes back to where we started, is that the solution to this is when-then statements.
Oh, yeah,
when
I love those.
4 o'clock, I'll get this done, right? And so, like, I procrastinate. When's the deadline? That I'll get it done 10 minutes before or an hour before. And so what we can do with kids and say, would it be helpful if we created an interim deadline? Mm-hmm. So, like, my son, his school, they had these huge, big, really cool, but research papers to watch. And like I said, watching him not write these things for 2 years, I thought I was going to just fall over dead. Mm-hmm. And then he missed the deadline and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And so when he was going into his junior year, I said, hey, listen, would it be helpful to work with my colleague, Kate, who's fantastic, as a writing tutor? And so, well, I don't know, what would she do? So I'm not 100% sure, but she's done a lot of work. I think she'd help you kind of be organized and break things up into pieces and kind of just so it doesn't all pile up at the end. Mm-hmm. Would you be willing to try that? He said, sure. And, you know, I mean, I run a whole company that has really good tutors, but I could have my kids tutored and everything, but I didn't. You don't give kids help that they don't need or don't want. And so he'd been meeting with her a couple, 3 weeks. And he says, Dad, I said, I feel like I'm wasting your money. Like, well, tell me more. I'm wasting Kate's time. Well, tell me more. Well, we meet every Sunday at 11 and I do all this work last minute and then I show up with her and hand it to her. And then there's not that much for us to talk about because they've just got it done. And I said, well, I really appreciate your thoughtfulness about her time and my resources. I said, respectfully, I think it's working beautifully because you like Kate, Kate likes you, we respect one another, and you don't want to show up empty-handed. And because you've made it a commitment, not just yourself, but to her, right? You get this work done, where otherwise experience suggests to me that you would have let it pile up and then it would have been really hard to do it at the end. Do you think that's right? He says, yeah, that makes sense. And so whether that's having your kid work with a tutor or the teacher every Thursday, third period, or kids at university, you know, as soon as you get that, you know, Elizabeth Hamlet, right? You know, wonderful book about supporting kids with learning disabilities in college, said she coaches all of her clients, students, to the first day they set foot on campus to go find where the writing center is. And the first day they have a paper due, go right over to Learning Center and say, I've got this paper this 2 and 3 weeks. Can you help me work out the plan?
Yes. I mean, benchmarking to me is so important for anybody, but I think especially for kids with ADHD. And it is the thing I have talked about with my son as well, and wanting to get him on such a plan as well. And you know, sometimes schools are on board with that kind of stuff and sometimes they're not. So then you have to get an outside person. Yep. I remember, I don't know if you watched that TED Talk. It's like the mind of a master procrastinator, Tim Urban. Oh my gosh. People, if you haven't seen
it. It was actually scheduled for 3 years earlier, but they were teasing you.
It was hilarious. Yeah. Anyway, there's like a monkey in your mind that's kind of like, you know, at the helm of your brain. And whenever you're like, hey, I've got to do this work. And the monkey's like, let's go. Yeah, so it's worth seeing. I love a good TED talk, but it does explain what's going on in my son's brain, I think. So yes, we know that like procrastination is obviously an issue for a lot of kids, and we know that you just talked about kids with ADHD, but there's also something that you've mentioned to me where kids are getting ready for college, or they're supposed to be getting ready for college, and the procrastination is taking hold in some unique ways. So what's going on there? And how can we talk to these kids about this problem? We know it in advance, so we can.
I mean, if we go back to the two flavors, the benchmarking is a really big deal. And part of it is that kids who procrastinate because of ADHD, one of the typical features of ADHD is time blindness.
Yes.
And they think this should only take X hours and it takes three. I mean, how long could this take?
Oh my gosh, how many times did my son say, it's like 10 minutes, mom. It's like 3 minutes. I'm like, it is not 3 minutes. It is not 10 minutes.
Yep.
You cannot read a book in that short of a time. Right. You cannot write a paper in that short of a time. That is time blindness. Hello.
And of course, just to gently, as you know, when you say, well, of course it's not, well, then, you know, there's no way you can get this in 10 minutes. He's not thinking about the ways that he won't get it done in 10 minutes. He's then fighting you, thinking of the ways he will, and he's not hearing it. So for a lot of things with that, I kind of suggest, let's try an experiment. Do me a favor, you know, and just try this for three and see if this helps you, right? So it's always not me being right, but see if this helps you. For 3 days, write down how long you think it'll take you to do things, and then write down how long it'd take you to do this, right? And this is, this isn't like I know better, but I don't want to see you in the position where you really want to do well, and because your best guess is just off by a bit, you don't get to do what you want to do. And just try an experiment, see where it is, because this is just data. Look, I can't possibly be the expert on you, kiddo. But my experience is that sometimes you're just such an optimistic kid. I'm trying to make this last up. You're such an optimistic kid.
So
and
positive.
Then sometimes things don't fully work out, you know, the best case scenario. So let's just try this. And then you'll know next time if you need to plan 20 minutes rather than 10 minutes. Right. And of course, it's going to be 3 hours. But he doesn't know that yet.
You're so right.
That would be a big part of it. It's also the case that particularly for things like college, like, you know, I'm probably wrong about this. My hunch is it's not going to take you 2 hours. It's probably going to take you a bunch more than this. But can you talk with your college counselor and just let her tell you, here's how much time you should plan for this, plan for this, plan for that. And then if you can beat it, fantastic. But because it's been a while since I've gone to college, at least that way, you know, right?
Right, because your college counselor clearly knows.
Right, and sort of outsource that. And you can send an email to me kind of say, dear college counselor lady, my child is delusional. Please still do write him a really good college recommendation, but at least in this, he's delusional, right? And outsource that to somebody else.
I love the idea of outsourcing that kind of information. Like, let's have somebody else tell you, because clearly I'm going to be wrong because I'm mom or dad. Like, we are so wrong. Like literally 99% of the time. And the interesting thing is even when we're right, we're wrong because you know, that couldn't possibly come out of your
mouth. Eating crow, you know, letting parents know they were right. Yeah.
That's way too painful. No, yeah. My mom always waited for my dad to say these words, you're right, Joan. That's all she wanted to hear. You're right, Joan. You're right. He would never say it. And then on my wedding video, he turned to her while he was being taped and he was like, you're right, Joan. I was like, oh my gosh, it's covered. Because so rarely want to say that. So I know your time is coming to a close because we're just throwing things in between your amazing appointments, but finish the sentence. In order to help kids conquer procrastination, we must.
Let them feel a sense of control.
So choices, options.
Yeah. And I mean, from my perspective, if a 13-year-old gets a zero on something, What happens? Right. What happens?
Not really that much, to be honest, in my house. Like, right. It's like the weight of it is not penetrating yet. I think once they get into high school, it does penetrate more.
Yeah.
But in middle school, it's kind of like a,
Yeah. I mean, I had a great conversation with Sarah Rosensweet about this, and she was reminding me, and it was such a great point. She said that emotionally, this is really important, and I've used this a lot. So thank you, Sarah, that emotionally, when people make mistakes, and children included, and they suffer the natural consequences of, oops, that could have gone better. Mm-hmm. Emotionally, we want to take their side. In your head, you're thinking, well, what did you expect, you dope? You watched 6 hours of NFL hockey, and then we're on your phone for the next 4 hours, and you tried mm-hmm. to dash us off between Cheerios and the bus. What did you expect? That's reality. Saying that, not helpful. Just as you mentioned a moment ago, 99% of the time they know you're wrong. Even then, when you are right, they won't give you the credit. The flip side to that is, the whole thing is an effing disaster. You told them 6 ways to Sunday that they should get on top of it. The whole thing blows up. And this is my fault? How is this my fault, right?
I know. It always is my fault.
And so emotionally, you know, what she would say is simply like, oh my gosh, you must be so frustrated. You really wanted to do well on that. And you were working so hard there right up until the end. In your head, you're thinking only at the end, but that's okay. We can still find some nuggets of truth. Working so hard on them right up till the end, and it totally fell apart. That sucks. And you emotionally take their side, because mm-hmm. that's what's likely to calm their hard feelings and bring that thinking part of their brain, the prefrontal cortex, back online. So the couple things, one, they're more likely to actually learn from and say, you know, I really could have. And also they're more likely to own up to, you know, maybe I shouldn't have. But when we beat them up emotionally from their perspective, they're going to spend all their energy trying to figure out, convince themselves why it was someone else's fault rather than their own. And it's hard to feel upset with yourself. I mean, you're at least if you're like me, my biggest source of frustration when I'm mad at myself for doing something. And if my wife or anyone else, not that she does this, piles on and says, well, why didn't you do it? Oh my goodness. Right. What I really want her to say is, oh, Ned, I'm so sorry. I know this is what you intended. This really does suck. And I know you didn't mean this. And I'm sorry it's so hard for you. It's much easier for me to own my mistakes.
Okay.
If I don't feel
like
you're
let go of the rope.
Piling on, right?
Let go
of the rope. And so then we want to do that because we want kids to make their own decisions so that they own their own decisions. So that when they do things last minute or they miss the deadline, they don't get to play soccer, they get a zero on it. They go, and then if we've emotionally take their side, we're in a position to jump in as the caring consultant and say, hey, listen, in the future, would it be helpful if I, and then you insert whatever thing you think might be helpful. If I, you know, help you set up a schedule for this, if I double check with you, if I check in once in a while to see if you're on pace, right? If I remind you to do that, would that be helpful? Mm-hmm. And if he says no, well then, okay. But chances are they say, yeah, I really like that, because most kids, they don't want to go to school and F things up. They just don't.
So that's your top tip, right?
Most of all, because the things that are hard when kids are 6 or 12 or 7, you know, it's not like they're going to get easier. It's not like they're going to have lower stakes, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, and I mean, again, if for you with your spouse or me with my spouse, right? If I really screwed things up, How receptive am I going to be to your advice, Rob? You say, well, Ned, that was a stupid thing. What were you even thinking, right? Golly, I don't want, I'm mad enough, right?
Yes.
And I keep going back. Oh, I was in a conversation with a parent earlier today and I put her in tears where a friend of mine, Sheila Olson, in her book about decision making, has this statistic that by the time children leave the household at the end of high school, they will, on average, have spent with us 90% of all the time they'll ever spend with us.
Ooh.
Think about that one. And so at the same time that you're trying to help a 13-year-old figure out middle school and acne and girls and high school and all that stuff, you're also at the same time setting the foundation, the relationship that you'll have with him as an adult, right? And once we don't have power over kids, it's totally on them whether they come back or not. And I, like you, want to have influence with my kids, not power over them. And so how respectfully we treat with talk to kids has a lot to say with what kind of relationship we'll have with them as adults. And my 22-year-old, I mean, he bit off a huge, I mean, he took an extra class and he's composing 6 scores this semester. It, when he was telling us about this at the start of the year, my wife and I are looking at each other like, oh Lord, like how, it'll be due in 10 minutes. We're thinking this is going to be a disaster, but he believed it would be the case. He called us up 2 weeks ago. Can we get on the phone? And he's going through about how kind of underwater he is, right? And in the back of my head, I was thinking, oh, dude, this is going to happen, but I'm not going to say that, right? And we say, oof, that's a lot. And just validate. Hey, can I, would this be helpful? Very tentative suggestions. And he made some corrections, but most of all, it calmed his thinking, right? And he got back online and went right back to doing the hard work to dig himself out of the hole that he dug himself into. And that's really what we want kids to do, is to reach out for help when they could use our help and to keep working hard at digging themselves out of holes that they're in and building up the future that we want them to have. So,
well, I'm going to take that in personally because I'm right there. So thank you for all of that. And please, everybody who's listening in, let's take that in. That's really important information. And it means that we can do something about it now. Give us the resource of the week. Where can we go to get more information about you, your books, and the wonderful work you're doing, my friend?
Our thank you for asking. We just launched we were fixing our website because it was busted up. By we, I mean someone who knows things that I don't know. So it's theselfdrivenchild.com. And I will share with you, I don't know if I showed you that, I made a wackadoodle TikTok about procrastination. Have you seen this thing?
I haven't, but I want to.
Oh, this is so extra. So one because I'm a test prep tutor. I can write upside down. So I have this glass top desk. And so I'm writing this thing with the Yerkes Dodson curve and all this stuff I was talking about. I also at the time had no hair because this is when my son was getting treated for his brain tumor. And so when he was losing his hair, we just shaved each other's head. And that was the thing. So I look vaguely demented. And the whole thing is incredibly intense. And so it went a little viral. So it got like 1.5 million views. So now I'm kind of TikTok famous. So I'll send this to you. So on TikTok, I am the other Ned Johnson because I didn't figure anyone else to take that. So I'll send you this.
You're the only Ned Johnson in my life.
Oh,
but
you're
okay.
So kind. It's delightful. For actual educational stuff, you know, go to The Self-Driven Child for pure amusement and zany foolishness of me, the other Ned Johnson.
Yes, and I'll be going back and forth with you all week. You know, we'll be talking about procrastination when we get to it. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
It is always
a pleasure. Talking to me about all of this. I love it all. And I can't wait to have you on again. So thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for what you do.
Well, I've got my takeaways, and sweet friends, I know you have yours. Let's discuss them. Come up on Facebook. We can go to the Dr. Robin Silverman page, or let's chat about it on X at Dr. Robin. I'm also on Instagram with a new handle because my old one was acting so strange. So follow me at Dr. Robin Silverman, okay? Dr. with a period after it, Robin Silverman. And I am so excited to hear from you. I've been putting all kinds of reels up there that show the strategies in action of how to talk to kids about anything. And if you love this podcast like I did, I hope you'll go up to iTunes and rate and review it so other people can learn about these outstanding solutions and use them in their own homes. Who doesn't love Ned Johnson? He's awesome. I truly appreciate it. That's all the time we have for today, my fellow parents, leaders, and educators. Thank you so much for tuning in to How to Talk to Kids About Anything. For more information on books, articles, speaking engagements, or curriculum, please go to drrobinsilverman.com. There's so many great podcasts up there, and the show notes to this podcast will be up there as well. I look forward to weathering the storms and enjoying the sunny side of life together. And please remember, even on the days when you fall short, you've got this. You're here, you're getting the information you need. I know it's not easy, but typically there's a tomorrow, and parenting provides the ultimate do-over. So if you heard something today and you thought, oh boy, I have not been doing that, or ooh, I have been doing that, this is the time you can make the change. You can do it today. I know I have to have these reminders too. I see you and I'm right there with you. And as there are moments when we doubt our know-how, our choices, and our sweet sanity, please know you are 10 times the parent you think you are. Until next time, this is Dr. Robin Silverman with How to Talk to Kids About Anything. Please tune in again and keep connecting through conversation. See you next week.
You've been listening to How to Talk to Kids About Anything with Dr. Robin Silverman. For more information on books, articles, speaking engagements, or curriculum, please visit drrobinsilverman.com.